You know, oh, it's the start of something, hopefully.
Welcome to the Garibaldi Gazette, a podcast about Nottingham Forest. This week, Worrall Way to leave for a bit. He's Serge Aurier. All that we can do is watch him go away. Dispatches from Bournemouth and Magpies follow Robins into the Forest. Already looking forward to the sticky toffolo pudding at the new Forest restaurant. This is the Garibaldi Gazette. Yeah, Forest have submitted a licensing application for the former Hearts restaurant in the city. The club apparently intends to reopen the restaurant to offer a high-quality dining experience similar to the previous operation. Huh. Welcome, anyway, to what is episode 4 of our Forest podcast. It's me, Matt Davis-Adams. Arsha Ali is not with us this week, but Nick Miller is. Hi, Nick.
Hello. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm all right, thanks. We've also got a debutante, Daniel Storey. Is with us. Daniel making his debut on the 7th of February 2024, known better as the 9-year anniversary of Forest's 3-2 win at Brighton. What a coincidence, Daniel. Welcome. Thank you for being with us.
Yeah, it's very fitting. Yeah, thanks for having me.
So, can anybody tell me which three players who featured for Forest that day are playing in the Premier League this season?
Oh, Mikel Antonio.
Yep.
Matty Cash.
Nope.
A bit early for my cash, I think.
Yeah.
Lascelles?
Lascelles is one.
Darlow count?
Nope.
This is now he's gone on loan? No.
Yeah. Former Forest Player of the Year. Grossly underrated, some would say hounded out.
This is great audio.
It's good. It's good audio and it's good quizzing.
Yeah.
I'm going to put you out of your misery in 5 seconds.
Can I have a clue?
When we had Gary Brazil on Two Stars, he told us that this player asked the club not to put a picture of him with his Player of the Year trophy on social media because he was worried about the responses. Which is very sad.
Christ, that's bleak, isn't it?
Yeah.
I was thinking you might tell us a club rather than a really sad story.
Okay.
You do, Matt.
He plays about as close to Nottingham as it's possible to be in the Premier League.
Ben Osborne.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Ben Osborne. Of course it is. Hugely disrespected. But anyway, just a bit of fun to start things off. I should have said Daniel is, of course, the chief football writer for the iPaper. You'll have heard him on the Totally Football Show as well. We are recording this pre the Bristol City game on Wednesday due to scheduling issues. So let's just say we could have done without that extra time, but it was really heartening to see Matt Turner save 4 penalties in the shootout win. Daniel, you're joining us from Côte d'Ivoire, where you are reporting on AFCON. We'll talk about Forest and AFCON in a second, but I just wanted to start with your thoughts in general on this season of tumult. Points deductions, possibly Cooper deductions, home form deductions. Are you feeling positive about the second half of the campaign, or are we going down?
I can't feel positive about it because of the kind of looming points deduction thing. I don't see how, for anyone, it ends in a good place for Forest, for the Premier League. For someone's going to be annoyed. I hope that's other people annoyed that Forest's very meagre points deduction or heavy fine or lo and behold, the kind of reward of a transfer ban. But I feel it's probably going to be somewhere between 4 and 6 points. And as we're playing at the moment, Luton are in 4 to 6 better points, you know, more points for the rest of the season form than Forest are. They're the club with the tails up. I hope that Palace get dragged into it, but I can't really be, you know, 17th would be an absolute victory right now, if you're asking me. And that doesn't feel a particularly pleasant place to be in.
Have you made your peace with the fact that Steve Cooper's not the manager anymore, and how are you feeling about Nuno?
Yes, I have. I'm glad he went when he did before the kind of social media ire fully blurred into match day Forest fans. I think that we avoided that. That was really nice. He looked really weary by the end. So I think it was coming some way down the road. We did it early enough that we got a manager who can keep us up. I'm slightly disturbed by the fact that Nuno seems to be effectively suffering from the same problem as Cooper, which is either that we are able to defend but then look quite blunt going forward, or we're kind of involved in these chaotic 3-2 games of which we've been coming out on the wrong side. That's slightly worrying, but then it is pretty early in his reign. We have had many players out. I still don't think he'll ever know his best team between now and May, and that's something that Cooper basically had for the whole time he was in charge. So he's a good enough manager to keep us up. Whether he will or not, I don't know.
Nick, what did you make of Nuno's comments in his presser before the Bristol City game, saying he'll never know his best team? It kind of just struck me as, he's quite a churlish guy anyway, isn't he? He doesn't particularly enjoy these interactions with the media, and he just didn't like the question rather than that being his genuine thought.
Yeah, probably. I mean, I when the Nuno appointment was kind of mooted, I sought comfort in the arms of the Athletic's Tim Spears, who covered Wolves for a very long time, and asked him to tell me reassuring things, which in fairness he did. But he also said that he can be, well, I won't use the words that Tim exactly used, but a prickly character, particularly in press conferences. I think he actually told Tim once that he said, I have the ability to be the worst person in the world. Now, you know, a slightly snippy or, you know, monosyllabic answer to a question in a press conference doesn't necessarily count as the worst person in the world. But yeah, he clearly doesn't enjoy speaking to anyone, really, or particularly speaking to the media. So I think this was just a kind of relatively mild example. I did feel quite sorry for whoever the journalist was who asked the question, because it was sort of a fairly vanilla but reasonable enough question. And he had to do that thing which I absolutely dread, where if you ask a question, you get a very, very short, like, one-word answer. You then have to rephrase the question to try and get him to say more things. And that is, along with listening back to interviews and hearing my fake laugh when the interview subject has made a kind of slightly bad joke, but I want to, you know, make it seem like I'm their pal. That's my least favourite thing about interviewing people, when they just give those kind of answers. So certainly from a fan's perspective, I don't really care if he's a bit rude to journalists, but it's not particularly pleasant when you're on the receiving end of it.
Yeah, the fake laugh is one of the first things you're taught in journalism school. It's a vital component for any good reporter. So you're out at AFCON, Daniel, and there's a heavy Forest influence still. Semi-finals tonight as we record. Olerena's Nigeria against South Africa. He's had a decent tournament, hasn't he? And he's actually been missed quite a bit by Forest, I think. He's fairly underrated.
Yeah, he's been exactly Forest's Olerena for Nigeria. He's been kind of that working multifunctional fullback. He's been playing right back, so he's had Ademola Lookman on that side, and that's been Nigeria's strength in the tournament, those two overlapping to service Victor Osimhen and Moses Simon. And yeah, he's been probably the best right back at the tournament, I think. You know, he is incredibly consistent, which is something I did not expect when he joined Forest. I thought he might be one of those who kind of flirts in and out of the team like so many of our other fullbacks, and plays well one week and then just doesn't seem to be in the team for another 2 weeks. But he seems like the firm fixture in that position for Forest, and he certainly is it for Nigeria. He's been superb pretty much all tournament. They are the favourites now. They are the best team left in the tournament, and that's partly because of him.
Excellent. Well, he won't be back in time for Newcastle, whatever happens tonight, because there's a third, fourth playoff as well. The other semi-final, Ivory Coast against DR Congo. So Sangare and Bolly both played in that mad quarterfinal win against Mali, but neither started. Sangare had been a fixture of the team up until that point, right? How have those two both done? Because we could do with Sangare kind of playing himself into form for when he comes back.
Yeah, we should be glad he was on the pitch at all, because he got a really nasty challenge from Sadio Mane in the last 16, which is the reason he didn't start that quarterfinal. He had started every other game and he came back into the team, as you say, as a substitute. I hope he plays in the semi-final. I hope he starts in the semi-final tonight. We do need to get him in some form. I think there is an argument that there's the slight same issue at Forest, where we signed what we thought was just a normal central midfielder, and actually he feels slightly positionless. He's not the obvious number six. He's not a kind of box-to-box midfielder, because he's a bit more languid than that. He's not an attacking central midfielder. I suppose he's best in a three in midfield. But yes, slightly positionless. But seems to do more of the ball winning at international level than we've seen so far at Forest. For Bolly, I mean, we're going to get back a player who's reasonably fit because he's only started one game, and that was a 4-0 defeat to Equatorial Guinea. So he's probably won't start the semi-final. He's slightly on the fringes of that squad. I guess that's an age thing as well. It's incredibly hot and humid out here. You're looking at kind of 95% humidity and 30-odd degrees. So maybe that's a factor. But yeah, Forest are going to get back a player who is probably reasonably rested, which is a nice touch after a major tournament.
And ready for February in Nottingham, climactically, if nothing else. Also, Cheick Kouyaté and Moussa Niakate are now back. Not good tournaments for either of those two. Obviously, Kouyaté's father passed away, so he missed some time. And Niakate missed the penalty in the shootout against Ivory Coast. Niakate, Daniel, does he get into your first choice Forest central defensive pairing when he's backing up to speed? Because he was on the bench at Bournemouth.
Yeah, I think so. I think if we're going to play the four, it probably is going to be him and Murillo. Niakate is a very senior player within that Senegal squad. There are times at Forest when I think he's been really good, but there are times when I think we thought he would be that for us, and there are still those kind of moments of rawness and those little mistakes. I mean, Newcastle at home is a fairly fitting anniversary for that, given what happened at the end of that game. So I think there are probably questions about how he plays alongside another fairly raw, talented central defender in Murillo, but that's the standout partnership. I do wonder when we get all those defenders back, whether Nuno will look at that three-man central defence he had at Wolves and try and do that with Willy Bolly or, you know, with Amadou Bielli. So I don't know, but yes, as a two there, they should be the two starters, I think.
Yeah, a bit of depth in that position now, which is why somebody's had to leave. You thought we'd covered the transfer window last week, didn't you, listener? You should have known Forest had a couple more cards to play, and we'll show them next. Right, so since we last spoke, Joe Worrall has left Forest on loan for the rest of the season. He's joined Beşiktaş in Turkey, where he'll team up with fellow Premier League outcasts Sata Mazuaku, Daniel Amati and Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain. Nick, it leaves Ryan Yates as the only survivor from the promotion-winning team. That's sad, but also, of that team, you'd only put Brennan and Samba into the current side, right? This is just part of the evolution of football?
James Garner as well, maybe. No?
Maybe.
Yeah, I was just trying to think. Just trying to, you know, make a case.
That season's Jed Spence.
Yeah. Make a case for Richie Lirea, maybe. No, anyway. Yeah, it is not kind of a particular surprise from a, you know, pure footballing quality point of view. It is quite funny that, you know, Ryan Yates, who even as late as the sort of start, first half of the promotion season, was, you know, being derided by many as not really good enough for the bottom half of the Championship, and now he's the one player left and, you know, sort of semi-regular in the Premier League. This made me feel a lot sadder than I kind of thought, partly because it was, we all kind of thought that he might be on his way. It looked like Sheffield United might be a possibility, and that didn't happen on deadline day. And then, like, just suddenly on Sunday afternoon or whenever it was, there he is wearing a Beşiktaş scarf. And he's just like, well, hang on, when did this happen? But now that Cooper's gone, there is a much less of an like emotional tie to the team. So you kind of you need players that aren't going to be quite so transient. There are a few of them that I think the fans have formed quite an attachment to. Gibbs White, obviously, Murillo, but they're players who you can't, maybe Gibbs White, but Murillo probably by design will move on, you know, relatively quickly. So I don't want to get sort of, you know, falsely nostalgic for a time when we were finishing between, like, you know, seventh and who cares in the Championship. But at least we did keep some players for a bit of length of time, kind of pine for the days of where Chris Curran was there. I mean, I pine for Chris Curran a lot of the time, but when he was, you know, just a sort of consistent presence, someone who's been there for a long time. And all of these players who I think we all formed a big emotional attachment to in the promotion season, not just because they got promoted. I think even if we'd lost that playoff final, then you know, everyone would have been incredibly fond of all these players. They're now almost all gone. I don't know. It wouldn't be a massive surprise if Yates went at some point as well. I did see there's a funny thread on the social media network X that listed Yates as a possible target for Barcelona, which was very enjoyable. But now I think I also saw that of the players currently on Forest books, Taiwo Awoniyi's the fourth longest serving. And the second and third were Larrea and someone else who's out on loan, who's not going to... Oh, Harriata, of course it was. Yeah, Harriata is the second longest serving player in the currently contracted to Forest. So it does all make kind of perfect football sense. We have got better centre-backs than Joe Worrall now, particularly if we're playing a back four. But it is really quite sad. What is slightly kind of a little bit like how Cooper got a little bit, there was a little bit of time for people to say goodbye. Worrall had that game against Chelsea, which I was, I was in the away end for, and it was the your absolute classic Joe Worrall performance, not really doing much other than throwing himself in front of things. And, Cooper was very keen to kind of push him to the front of the players at the end of the game and, let him take his applause. And so I guess it was good that we got one last of those before he kind of got phased out of the team. But yeah, it kind of slightly took me by surprise how sad I was to see him go.
I think it was nice that he got those couple of minutes at Newcastle, didn't he, Daniel, to say goodbye as well. But the really sad thing about it was the fallout with Steve Cooper, because that shot, which we all love, of Joe kind of crunched over on the pitch after Arsenal and Cooper with his hand on his shoulder, that spoke of the unity between them, which for whatever reason dissolved towards the end of Cooper's time. But do you think that's it for Joe? Or if we get relegated, do we just bring him back because he's a serviceable championship level defender?
Yeah, I mean, I'd be happy to have him back in the championship. I think that's exactly what he is. I think he could have been a Premier League defender, but I think only in a certain environment. You look at, there are two ways to try and stay in the Premier League. One is by doing what we've done, which is completely overhauling the first team squad. And the other is to try and create this kind of tight-knit group of ostensibly high-end championship players who become overperforming bottom half Premier League players, which is sort of what Luton are trying to do this season. I know he's not playing now because of, sadly because of collapsing again, but Tom Lockyer is basically a championship defender who was overperforming in the Premier League when he was playing. And he was doing that because of the environment around him. And I think if Joe had had the same midfield in front of him, the same kind of protection, the same fullbacks as he had in the championship, the same goalkeeper behind him, maybe he would have felt a little bit more confident and able to, just play his game. I think he probably felt from pretty early on in the Premier League that he was going to have to do a bit more than that to impress, to be good enough. And then he got out of his comfort zone. I think he tried to do things. We saw him having to run back towards his own goal and trying to play with a higher line. It just wasn't working for him. He's not fast enough to do that. He is a clear the lines championship defender, and I'm sure he could do that again. I too am really sad. I've got that canvas on my wall of him lifting the playoff trophy in the Market Square, and it really did feel like it meant as much to him as it did to us. And I don't know if that's true about some of the other players, but it's very hard to do that when you've only been at a club 18 months. We will lose that. I'm really glad that Ryan Yates is hopefully over the kind of strongest criticism that he gets, the kind of ire from supporters, because I think he's arguably the most important player in that team now. Because as Nick said, in terms of regular first team players, Taiwo Awoniyi is the second longest serving player at Forest. And that can lead to a kind of lack of identity and personality in a team if you're not careful.
Yeah, we need to keep Ryan Yates for as long as possible. Serge Aurier also chickened out of the relegation battle to head to Turkey. He's joined Galatasaray on a permanent deal. He made 41 appearances for Forest. Daniel, I've got him pegged as the most surprising of last season's signings, because he came in right at the end, didn't he? And everybody was kind of scratching their heads going, well, what do we need this guy for? All he ever does is give away penalties. But he was actually very important for Forest last season.
Yeah, he was. And yeah, I exactly the same. I thought he was, because Forest had a few of those, I thought, you looked at all those transfers and you made a list of three who might play 10 games or fewer. And I thought Aurier might have been one of them. But he had that kind of Premier League personality, I suppose. He sort of offered this sense of, I know what I'm doing, which wasn't always clear during his Spurs spell. And He was also kind of good going both ways as a fullback. He made Forest, he gave Forest a slightly different identity. He offered some of that Jed Spence attacking, but without that being all of his game. He was more, far more solid defensively than I thought he would be with his recovery pace. And yeah, I mean, genuinely, as much as you can be a good servant to a club over 41 games, I suppose he was exactly that.
And that's where Forrest needed to shed some numbers, right, Nick? I don't know what he was on, but I imagine he was on a pretty decent wage, and we've got dozens of right backs anyway, so it's one of those that suits everybody.
Yeah, makes kind of perfect sense. It's kind of the best case scenario for one of those slightly random free transfers. You squeeze a lot of juice out of them in the first season, and you know you have to give them a 2-year contract, otherwise they won't come. But then, if they turn out to be not as good in the second season, which has kind of pretty much been the case, then you know, they move on somewhere else. So yeah, as you've both said, one of the more surprising, one of the great pointers, like the pointers and shouting at other people to do things, and score good goals. Well, I say scored goals. He scored goal. He scored against Chelsea. Did he get any others?
He provided the two assists at the start of this season, didn't he? Was that against Sheffield United?
Oh, yeah. Yes, two crosses. Both for Iwani? No, one for Iwani, one for Wood. Yeah, I always like I quite like a fullback who has the kind of chutzpah to go up for corners as well. It's just like, you know, the default is that your little fullbacks stay back on the halfway line, but for someone to go, nah, someone else can do this. Come on, piss off to some kind of little central midfielder or something, you can stay back, I'm getting involved here. Not to a huge amount of effect, but that, you know, that Chelsea goal was quite good.
Sure was.
He was also never more than 3 minutes away from taking a throw in so bad that somehow didn't get called for a foul throw. He's an incredible fake foul throw merchant, so got to enjoy that.
Besiktas and Galatasaray, by the way, meet at the start of next month, so let's hope that it is Worrell versus Aurier there. Also, looks like Hwang Wee-joo is going to Alanyaspor on loan to make a hat-trick of departures to Turkey. We'll always have that goal in the pre-season friendly at Notts County, I guess. Right, we'll reflect on the draw at Bournemouth next. So, Forest went to the seaside and all they got was this actually rather useful point. Our friend David Marples was on hand for the match. He sent us this report.
Good evening, friends. Now, it has to be said that Boscombe Pier is a little underwhelming. Apologies to Boscombe Pier ultras out there. Not one of those machines into which you pour endless pennies in the hope of winning a sticker to be found anywhere. Nonetheless, cliched as it may be, a walk on the beach always lifts a spirit. And friends, those spirits needed lifting after 5 minutes of this game, which coming just after Groundhog Day felt, well, very Groundhog Day. We can only dream of taking a point from the game after those 5 minutes. But we rallied, came back into it, and defended staunchly, and earned a pretty deserved point in an even game, which, coming against a form team away from home, is, well, encouraging. Our seats were right on the front row, from where the game seemed ridiculously fast, especially in the middle of the park, where tackles and arms and boots were flying all over the place. But the big talking point arose on the way home, in which a fierce division akin to civil war broke out regarding whether one should eat crisps or chocolate first, which one of these should finish a snack. Context is everything, and I think it's dependent upon whether there's crisps with a sandwich or whether you've got a hot drink with the chocolate as well to go with afterwards. But broadly speaking, I am in the camp of crisps last, surely. But perhaps after such a contentious issue, we are on safer ground, we've decided in man of the match. And I will defer to young Zachary next to me to nominate his.
My man of the match is Nico Williams because he put in good tackles.
Excellent. I think we can all get on board with that one. I'll leave you to debate the crisps chocolate issue and the man of the match while we finish off the sour caterpillars, which are the nutritional cornerstone of any away day meal.
And many thanks to David and Zachary, and obviously it's crisps before chocolate there. Daniel, away points not to be sniffed at for Forest, and actually only been beaten in one of the last four away league games. That's something that we can definitely pin on Nuno, right? That he's made us more difficult to beat on the road.
Yeah, I think that's fair. There are some things that clearly haven't been ironed out. The set piece issues, conceding early goals. We do seem to have managed to get rid of, particularly away from home, that really horrible habit last season of conceding a goal suddenly leading to a kind of complete head loss and therefore another goal coming in the next 5 or 6 minutes. I think we were pretty good value for the point. There's definitely an issue about being able to switch through the gears. I think we saw that particularly after the red card. In that if Forest do look to be solid, which seems to be their idea away from home and play on the counter, that if they get a bit stuck in there, it's hard to change through those gears. It's hard to then attack a team. But yeah, a good point. I mean, it's both a good point and makes me feel slightly sad that 18 months on from promotion we're saying, well, a draw at Bournemouth is a really good point in the bid to finish 17th. But it is. They have been far better than us this season. They look like they've got more of a kind of tactical identity. And they've been really good at home. So it is a good point. But these are only good points if you then follow them up by actually winning home games. And that's something we haven't done enough recently.
Matt Sell's still riding the crest of the wave of not being Turner or Vlachodimos looks okay on his debut. Something that strikes me, Nick, is that Forest, now that some players have come back from AFCON and some injuries are clearing up, look like they've got a bit more depth. Just looking at the subs who came on, Danilo and Reina and Montiel. I mean, that's some quality to actually bring on and affect a game, which is not something that's been the case for much of the season.
Yeah, and it was the two things that were reassuring about the Bournemouth game. As you say, just looking, even before kickoff, just looking at the bench and kind of going, oh, well, you know, if something goes wrong, then we're covered. Or if we need to change something up here, then there are options to, you know, change shape or change approach. Or the only thing was that there wasn't a huge amount of like attacking threat with the kind of various injuries there. And I suppose the lack of too many attackers in the squad. But, and the other thing was me not soiling myself every time the goalkeeper had the ball at his feet, which was, which was a real boon. Because I think anyone who says they knew a huge amount about Matt Sells other than from his, you know, spell at Newcastle a few years ago is possibly a bit of a fibber. But he just looked exactly kind of what I expected, which was perfectly solid, perfectly competent, not anything kind of particularly spectacular. He kind of half wondered whether he could have done a little bit more for the goal. Maybe could have come out a little bit stronger, but there were a load of bodies in the 6-yard box, so I suppose you can't blame him hugely. But other than that, he was a sort of goalkeeper that, if it wasn't for the fact that he was replacing someone who terrified me every time the ball went anywhere near him, I wouldn't really have noticed, which I suppose is, you know, I suppose I say that about referees more than goalkeepers, but it also works rather nicely for keepers as well. So, yeah, a couple of reassuring things.
Forest actually have more possession in the game and more shots on target. Maybe that's coloured slightly by the late red card for Philip Billing. Last three league away games of this season, Daniel, are Everton, Burnley and Sheffield United. That could be A, quite handy, and B, pretty pivotal, right? And I know why you're shaking your head and I'm with you, but I have seen Burnley live at home this season and they are not very good, and nor are Sheffield United.
That is definitely true. I was just slightly laughing in that at least Nick is having a kind of 3-month break from soiling himself before those last three away games. The reality is, yeah, they are our best chances of picking up points. They are also incredibly scary. I would like to think that Burnley and Sheffield United by that point may basically be down, which is, is more handy than still having a chance. And if we've got something to play for and they haven't and we don't win, then that's, you know, that's our own fault. It will come down to those games. I don't see any way that it can't. Unless Luton really drop off a cliff, then I just don't see, if there's any sort of points deduction, how can be completely head above water by that point. So it will come down to those games, and the home games around them are pretty difficult. So, I mean, if you got us now, Matt, you need 7 points from those games for Forest to stay up, or 5 points. How many would you be confident of Forest needing to stay up? What, 6 from those three games?
Yeah, and that sounds doable. I mean, don't play this tape back at the end of the season.
It's just Sheffield United away, isn't it? It's just all of our nightmares coming home at once.
Yeah, that's whenever I can't get to away games, I am always very jealous of the people that are there. But I don't really think I'm going to, if I can't get a ticket for that Sheffield United game, I'm not going to be jealous of those people there. That is going to be horrible. And I know we've had, like, were you two there in 2003 for the playoff semi-final at Bramall Lane? Both, yeah. We are all still scarred by that, although we have had kind of various games of redemption at Bramall Lane since then, not most notably, of course, the playoff semi-final a couple of seasons ago. But you don't kind of erase scars like that. You don't erase moments like me turning to my dad and saying, oh, it's a good job we've got those away goals as Sheffield United equalised, and him turning to me like he was just about to tell me he was leaving my mother, saying away goals don't count in the playoff semi-final, Nick. So even if it wasn't what could be a kind of crucial relegation game, and even if it wasn't against a team we are not particularly fond of, and even if it wasn't at a place that can be as horrible as Bramall Lane, it's always going to be triggering kind of game. And I mean, if anyone wants to give me a ticket, then I'll definitely be there, and as a sort of act of self-harm. But if I don't go, then I'll just, you know, hold myself up in the spare room or something.
And read the reports of Ben Osborne sticking one into the top corner in the 94th minute to secure a 1-0 win.
Matt, come on. I mean, I know it's a few months away, but you're kind of giving us such a kind of run-up of despair to this.
Well, look, let's be positive and say Forest have already been to Arsenal, Manchester United, Chelsea, Manchester City and Liverpool. And we were quite cross about that at the start of the season, but we're glad that we got all those games out of the way before the inevitable points deduction. All right. There are a couple of ways you can support our podcast. Give us a nice review and a 5-star rating wherever you get your pods. You can tell a friend. And if you're able, you can help out our charity partners. The first of which are Hope Nottingham. They offer a food bank service for those in need in Notts. Here's Nigel Adams from the charity to tell us more.
Hope Nottingham runs a network of 14 community hubs and food banks across the Nottingham area, everywhere from Stapleford across to Netherfield. In the last year, we've given out 25,000 food parcels for people that are struggling with all kinds of difficulty due to cost of living, due to unemployment, due to homelessness, all sorts of different issues. But we're only able to do that because we get massive, wonderful support from so many people. And Nottingham Forest, actually, in recent years, have been really helpful to us. We've done a number of food bank collections at the ground through Nottingham Forest. And the massive support that we get across the city, we're able to bring hope to hundreds of people.
To donate, visit localgiving.org/hopenotstgg. We'll provide a link to that in the show notes too. All right, our Newcastle preview comes next. So it's Forest versus Newcastle United at the world-famous City Ground this Saturday, 5:30 p.m. for those of us in the UK. It will be live here on Sky Sports. We've spoken of the importance of the away games at the end of the season, Daniel. Last week, we spoke about the importance of the next three home league games. Newcastle have improved slightly of late, but they're beatable, right? I mean, they conceded 4 goals at home to Luton last weekend.
Yeah, they are beatable. Forest beat them. But yeah, there is certainly pressure on these home games now in a way that there wouldn't have been if we'd have won at Bournemouth, or there wouldn't have been if we'd have beaten Bournemouth at home, or even taken a point at Brentford, or whatever. We know that Forest's survival last season was predicated on a fairly emphatic slant towards form at the City Ground, and that just hasn't quite been there in the same way. There have been moments when we felt the same, most notably the Manchester United game, which I thought was easily the most positive moment under Nuno, because he'd seemed like he'd managed to cherish what was working under Steve Cooper in those big home games, and this is another of them. If that atmosphere stays, if Forest start quickly, if they do what they did to Manchester United, which is stop them getting chances on the break, and happy to sacrifice possession, but retaining that counter-attacking threat, then I think they can get Newcastle. Newcastle are better against teams that have this high line. They've beaten Villa emphatically twice this season because Villa have just stayed too high at the pitch and allowed players to run in behind. That isn't Nuno's MO, we know that. So that's a reasonably positive sign, I think. And they're going to have to take their chances, because you look at what happened at Newcastle and it looks a really good performance, and it was a really good performance. And that's because Chris Wood was incredibly clinical. We've had a problem ever since getting promoted in scoring in those moments when we're on top, and not scoring in those moments when we're on top, and then conceding as soon as the opponent puts some pressure on us. We've sort of eliminated that under Nuno, not helped by the goalkeeping situation, but this is the start of the run that probably defines the rest of the season, I think.
Yeah, and certainly going to miss Chris Wood out for a couple of months by the looks of things. Nick, Forest are often at their best when they're playing counter-attacking, but they need to be a bit more front foot here. Can't be a 27% possession job like we saw against Arsenal last week.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's I don't necessarily think that it needs to be kind of all out trying to dominate possession, all that kind of thing. Because, I mean, partly because that's not how they beat Newcastle a few weeks ago. I suppose the Chris Wood thing, I mean, Jesus, imagine us saying 6 weeks ago that we're, you know, Chris Wood's out for 2 months. That's what a huge blow that is. It is a blow. It's also, it's almost more of a blow in terms of Awoniyi because you know, he's just come back. We know he barely finishes 90 minutes.
I don't think he ever has. I don't think he's ever played 90 minutes for Forest.
Did he not play all 90 against Bournemouth?
Oh, he did. That was his first time. Yeah. First time ever against Bournemouth. Well done, Taiwo.
Which is not ideal. I mean, you know, as we said, we were recording this before the Bristol City game. I wouldn't have him anywhere near that this game if there were kind of alternatives. There aren't many alternatives at the moment. If Origi's, I don't know what the status of Origi is at the moment. If he's, you know, if he's injured or if he's just kind of hovering over the Atlantic waiting to move to some MLS team, I'm not really sure. The alternative, I guess, being our Portuguese child who, you know, came on and ran about a bit against Bournemouth. But the ideal scenario, kind of, you know, when you came back after Wood being in really good form, it looked like a kind of ideal scenario of being able to manage them both. You could almost like choose which one to start based on what kind of game you were playing. And you wouldn't kind of lose a huge amount in terms of the overall play. And I think we know that Awoniyi is a much better all-round player, but with Wood scoring goals, it was much easier to have Awoniyi on and batter the opposition for 60, 65 minutes, bring Wood on, and you wouldn't necessarily think it would have much less of a chance of scoring a goal. Him now being out for a couple of months is a kind of big blow in terms of managing Awoniyi's time as well. Ideally, you wouldn't want him playing 90 minutes at all, really, but he's probably going to have to for a lot of the next couple of months, unless we all wrote off Ribeiro as this kind of, you know, Uncle George favour teenager who's just come in for a few months on loan for reasons unclear. And, you know, he might turn out to be absolutely brilliant. Who knows? Maybe everyone's listening to this after he sort of banged in a hat trick in the FA Cup, but who knows?
Yeah, we'll put that on the maybe pile. For now, I think. What's your plan B then, Daniel, if and when Taiwo either has to come off or gets injured again? Forest don't look particularly good when they play with a false nine, do they? Is Origi just total dead weight? Are you then thinking, well, we'd have to use a Sapporo song from the under-21s or something? Or are we better off just trying a kind of Gibbs White or a Langer as a false nine?
I think what they'll do, I don't think he'll do the false nine thing. I don't think he'll start Divock Origi. I think if Origi was going to play significant minutes, he would have already done so, to be honest. You know, he's nowhere near the fringe of the squad at the moment, is he? For whatever reason. I think what they'd probably do is do a kind of split striker thing where Gibbs White plays behind two split strikers, whether that's kind of Rayner and Alanga or Cho and Alanga, whichever the two, and they sort of drift wide and Gibbs White runs through and kind of produces those runs beyond them, which can work quite well on a counter-attack if that's how we're going to play it. And it seems that that is how we're going to do things. I know it's been in fits and starts, but I've been pleasantly surprised by Anthony Elanga this season. Hudson-Odoi has scored two of our better goals this season. There's clearly an issue about consistency of his fitness as well, but then Gio Reyna coming in hopefully hits the ground running. So, yeah, I think that's what you do, split strikers, but it's not necessarily Nuno's game. We know that he likes a kind of target man figure. His Wolves team was built around Raul Jimenez. I think he liked building around Chris Wood in the same way when Taiwo wasn't there. So it is it's a massive blow for the next 2 months. As Nick says, it seems the last thing that Taiwo's body needs is him to be forced to play minutes when he's not quite at it or his energy levels are lower. And there's a reason we've been managing that for 18 months, basically, because there's clearly something about him that means he's not comfortable playing for 90 minutes and he gets muscle injuries when he does. So, yeah, we're sort of convert one of the rooms at the training centre to a kind of cotton wool cupboard and keep Taiwo in there for 3 months, basically.
Yeah, I mean, that's why he's at Forest, isn't it? And not still at Liverpool or somebody else, because he can't stay fit for very long. I'm trying to keep it positive, Nick. Forest have lost 5 of their last 6 home league games, and Newcastle have won their last 3 away in all comps. What's going to happen here then?
Hang on,
I said I was trying. I didn't say I was managing to do it.
You know what? I think Forest are going to win this game. I don't know. I haven't got a huge amount of logic to back it up, as the facts that you have so cruelly laid out there have just shown. But I don't know. There's something about Newcastle that, even though they have looked much better in recent weeks, they just feel like they've got a bit of a dodgy jaw at the moment. I think if you go at them a little bit, then you might have a bit of joy. So yeah, Forest going to win. There you go.
Of course, what we shouldn't forget, Daniel, is that it's under the lights, and that is a thing, apparently. And also, Newcastle are just drifting, right? They're probably not going to finish in European places this season. They're going to be firmly mid-table. There's more motivation for Forest to get the points than Newcastle. Not that that's going to have any impact on the result, but I'm clutching.
Yeah, it is. I mean, the big thing to learn from the fixture last season is that Forest played pretty well for 90 minutes and then just turned into an absolute clown show during the 2 periods of stoppage time. So avoiding that would be nice. There's something about supporting Forest at the moment where you kind of look back on fixtures that are less than a year ago and feel absolutely ages ago, like Emmanuel Dennis scoring a gorgeous little dink, and you think, oh yeah, that happened. But yeah, I mean, it's one of our kind of fixtures for the rest of the season at home, I think, because as you say, we are now entering that stage of the season where playing a team in 9th or 10th is better than playing a team in 16th or 17th, because there is less to play for. They are still in the FA Cup, so that's where their priority will probably lie at the moment. So, yes, we have to take advantage of that. It's a massive game for the rest of the season. It really is. I don't want to kind of overload the pressure on it. But with how we've performed recently at home, with how we performed away at Newcastle, you know, it's a kind of flashing neon sign that this is one of the ones we have to win. Certainly, if we're going to get to a position in the league where a 6-point deduction doesn't take us down into the relegation zone, you're therefore looking at 45 points. And 45 points is, yeah, it's a long way off if we don't win games like this. I would take a point right now. Doesn't really change anything, a point, does it? But I'd certainly still take it.
Just to emphasise the turnover at Forest, I've just got the team up from this game last season, 17th of March. Forest starting 11 that day. Keylor Navas, Moussa Niakate, Serge Aurier, Renan Lodi, Felipe, John Joe Shelvey, Morgan Gibbs-White, Brennan Johnson, Ryan Yates, Emmanuel Dennis and Andre Ayew. We really have signed a lot of very average players.
You started. Oh my days.
I think you could have given me 2 hours of recording and I would have not remembered Andre Ayew.
Yeah, that penalty at Spurs that he didn't score, that was about it. Thanks, Andre. Right, we're nearly done for the day, but we're going to finish with a bit of fun that I think Daniel's going to absolutely hate. After the Robins and the Magpies visited the City Ground in the same week, obviously, we're doing Forest players as bird puns. Nick, we did extraordinarily well last week not to have any cross-pollination between the two of us. So let's see if we've kept that this time. Who have you got for me, please?
Well, I don't know if we want to start with the names that aren't actually puns. They're just names of birds. So Will Swan, there's a guy called Walter Robins who played as a winger in the 1930s. Someone called Chris Crow as well. There you go. But the ones that I'm turning into puns, what have I got? I've got a list and I'm not really pleased with myself about any of them. Kieran Dowell, Owl, Dowell, Dowell.
Yeah.
Dowell. Sort of German. Yeah.
Dowell. Yeah.
6 out of 10, but got to start somewhere.
Generous.
Ian Storky Moore.
Okay.
If you ever call me Daniel Storky, that'll never happen.
Chris Woodpecker.
I got Chris Woodpecker. Yeah. That's an obvious one.
And one more. Jason Cummings Bird. Hummingbird.
Hummingbird.
Right. Okay.
You can't see the delighted faces on the other end of the Zoom, listener, but let me tell you.
It's telling that producer Lucy switched her camera off. That's all I'll say. Daniel, would you like to rate those and add any that you have yourself?
Steve Stonechat. A Stonechat is a... Wikipedia tells me it's a European...
Okay,
bird.
That's a thinker. Yeah.
Perfect. I'm just pleased to be sharing a podcast with two bearded tits.
Oh, there you go. Lovely.
Yes.
Lovely.
But no, seriously. No, I haven't got any more.
Okay. I've got some more. Dexter Blackbird.
Yeah.
The Dexter Blackstock.
Surely Kingsley Blackbird.
Yeah, I did have Chris Woodpecker. Our friend Ben Osborne, I've reimagined him as Ben Osprey.
Yeah. So you're taking some liberties there, I think.
Yeah. Really? Okay. Roy Dwightless Bird. Gore of the 1959 FA Cup final. Kenny Birds, obviously.
Yeah.
That was an obvious one. And to finish with, Michael Jack Dawson.
Yeah.
A mixed bag.
Yeah. I mean, it felt like a Michael Jackson pun, yeah. Really, but yeah, Andy Coltitt. I mean, that's... Sorry.
Listen, you probably got some better ones than this. Get in touch and tell us. You can follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter, at the Garibaldi G. It's the Garibaldi Gazette on Instagram. And you can watch the pod on YouTube if you like. We are also there, the Garibaldi Gazette. Yeah, if you can give us a nice rating, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get them, that always helps other Forest fans find the show. Or if you just want to tell somebody that we are here, that would be appreciated too. Daniel, how long are you in Africa for?
The semi-finals are tonight as we record, and then the final is Sunday, and I fly back late Monday night.
Well, what a brilliant experience. And yeah, what a great job you got, Abe, been all over the world this year doing some fine reporting. To sign up to read all of Daniel's work, inews.co.uk/subscribe. It'll only cost you £1.50 a week. Nick, will you be watching the Newcastle game from behind the sofa?
Very much so. Yep. My wife is going to be away, so I'm going to just kind of hammer a large piece of crooked wood over the windows, and I hope for it to all be over quite quickly.
Excellent. I've got a women's FA Cup commentary, which kicks off at exactly the same time. So I'll be doing that thing where I try and avoid the score, and obviously it doesn't happen. Ruins my Saturday night. But hey, if you're going to the game, do enjoy it. It's a big one for us. We'll reflect on it in next week's show when Asha will be back with us. Until then, though, many thanks to Daniel again for stepping in today, to Nick, to Lucy for putting it all together, and mainly to you for listening. Back with another one next week. Bye for now.